Like, commercials are so crazy. They're so clearly pandering to people. And they just pretend like they're doing this thing that is, like, not true.
Yeah.
It's so obvious.
Right.
And, like, the fact that that's how people are getting, like, creating empires, like, from tricking dumb people, it just seems so intense.
Yeah, that...
But yeah, so I felt like that thing...
People have been asking me to get behind this, this march on D.C., July 4th, and I got some mixed feelings about it. Like, listen, I'm all about, let's abolish this gun control nonsense. I'm all about it. I'm a patriot. I'm an NRA member. I'm active. I go to rallies. I do things politically. I vote the way I think I need to vote to preserve my rights, et cetera, et cetera. This particular march, and albeit I don't know everything about it, but apparently it's supposed to start on the Virginia side of a bridge and go to the D.C. side of a bridge. And people are being encouraged to carry rifles, AR-15s in particular, apparently. And I just think that's a recipe for disaster. As soon as you on the Virginia side, those rifles and magazines and ammunition or whatever may or may not be legal, in a public gathering like that. But we know when you walk across that bridge, when you hit the D.C. side, you're a felon. As soon as you touch the other side, as soon as you touch the dirt on the other side, you instantly become a felon.
Good God.
Well, there's this guy, Adam Kokesh, that's organizing that march, that rally that the guy was just talking about and talking against, right? What do you think of the march on D.C. that Adam Kokesh is planning?
I think it's a recipe for stupidity. There's no good that will come out of a bunch of people marching with guns. Most of them probably loaded, is my guess.
It sounds like that's being debated. Some people are saying unloaded, some loaded, but it sounds like a lot of people are in favor of loaded. Yeah, there's this guy who has this like podcast and stuff, and he is just, it's kind of publicity seeking, but it's, it's one of those things that's gotten a lot of attention. He's talking about getting a bunch of gun nuts together and marching over a bridge to Washington, D.C. And so this guy was recently at a marijuana legalization rally in, I think, Philadelphia. And he was arrested and held for a few days. And then he was recently released. And it was said that he hadn't even used any weed when he was there. But they had just scooped him up. So I don't know if he was talking to the feds or whatever. But now he's out, and it sounds like he's like serious about this thing. And it definitely sounds like when even that tactical response guy that was playing the clip of earlier is saying that he doesn't support it. I mean, what, of course, other gun nuts aren't even supporting this because it's very confrontational. But it does bring up the whole question of we play that clip of Ice-T saying the United States is based on guns. Mm-hmm. But he's one of those people. One of the reasons that clip is so amusing is he's one of those people who's bought into that idea that the real point of having guns is to protect yourself from the government. And maybe that's true in a kind of hyper-local sense, like to protect yourself from a wrongful assault by an officer or something. But the idea that you're going to band together, because again, the Second Amendment does talk about militia, right? Like, the idea that there's going to be a citizen militia that's going to take on the U.S. Marine Corps or the Army.
Well, what's the purpose of marching across the bridge into D.C. with all the guns?
I guess it's a show of force or a kind of a protest in the world that some of those people live, they consider with doing that a protest.
Of what? What are they protesting?
Well, there are very strict gun laws in Washington, D.C., which I think are fine, but, you know, that's something they're definitely against. So in Virginia, I think, you know, it's unclear, but you may be able to open carry. Well, you know, I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see if it actually happens on the July 4th weekend. Hopefully not.
In sensing Reed, Judge William Young told him, "The way we treat you is the measure of our own liberty." We went on. Addressing that, ma'am. You know, I think that and I'm going off script as you might expect here. The voice of that woman is worth paying attention to. Obviously.
So Barack Obama was interrupted in that speech, and actually was fairly patient, but I think after like the third interruption, the protester or heckler was removed. But it was about the drone program being controlled by the CIA. It was about how they shot that Alaki, the 16-year-old, or they droned him.
Yeah.
And then the hunger strike going on in Guantanamo Bay. And, I mean, there was a lot, in there, and he did actually let her speak to a greater extent than I think is, like, you know, we're used to at a lot of political events, but those are definitely real issues, and she really got some airtime there.
She did. I actually was pretty surprised how flustered he got.
Yes.
And, I actually think, you know, when he still tried to keep speaking over her, I thought that was a little bit rude. You know, like,
Off as arrogant a little bit, right. But also patient in a way. Like, I think it's at times in that speech, he comes off as being pretty patient and letting her kind of talk. And then he comes off as quite arrogant at times, which I guess, you know, very presidential.
I mean, I just feel like it's two-faced, though. I mean, he's the one supporting all those decisions, and then he says something in a speech, well, this woman's voice needs to be heard.
I think you're right.
Let's just placate everybody and make them feel like they're going to be heard, but I'm still going to go use drones, and I'm still going to do all these horrible tactics, and I'm still not going to end Guantanamo, and I'm not really going to address the actual problems. I'll just placate to the, you know, hecklers in the crowd.
It's much more effective politics to let dissent be heard. And that's what separates him. It's true that he is doing some things that are very, very regrettable in terms of the way he's managing the so-called war on terror. But I guess on the one hand, he is more capable of hearing dissent than Republicans are about it when they're in charge of the White House. But also, I think, I don't know if it's an irony or a complexity of the speech, is that he was being interrupted while he's giving a speech where he's mainly talking about probably not a U-turn, but like a slight angle change in the so-called war on terror. And, you know, we're at a point where, I don't know, you know, it's certainly not a good record right now, but his openness to hear her, I mean, the guy is, you know, pretty politically savvy. So maybe he wanted that to be heard because he's not actually going that direction. But even if he's making a nod in that direction, you know, the dynamics of letting people talk. I mean, it's one of those things. Like, the policies are still not good enough, and there's no question about that. But it was sort of interesting theater for that moment.
For sure.
You know, like, theatrics continue over the Obama administration, and one of the things I don't think we've talked about yet is the AP spying. So they were looking into AP bureaus, a few different ones, and their phone records, because I guess supposedly it was about tracking down a story maybe about drones or the Middle East or something, and AP wrote something and they wanted to know where the sources were. And then we were talking about the not yet well-developed, but very vague parallels to Watergate, because that started as the presidential administration chasing after the press, trying to get their records and figuring out who was leaking to them and what was going on, right?
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, we've always been sort of taught in journalism school that we are an unofficial branch of the government. And
Fourth Estate.
Exactly, and that we represent the people and we are going to cover what, you know, goes on. And we have to have a certain level of integrity and you have to have a certain level of keeping your sources safe. And basically the government is a big snitch. They were going in there trying to figure out what was going on and trying to figure out, you know, who the big snitcher was. So it's not surprising that the government would do this, but it's certainly appalling. I mean, if they're going to do it with this, what else are they going to do it with? And then if, like you were saying, you know, the if they're playing the Homeland Security card, what else can they play that on? If they get away with this, tap anybody's phones, look at anybody's research, emails, whatever.
It's an issue of national
security. Anything could be an issue of national security. And you're the one making up the rules, so you can change the rules.
And they make the buzzword or the catchphrase, the world is the battlefield. You know, that's the idea, is that anything has to do with the war on terror as long as the entire world is considered the battlefield. Even though the whole thing is a made up construct, and it's really just as futile as an idea as the war on drugs. That goes back to, you know, the Adam Kokesh thing. You know, I think the people in the marijuana legalization movement have to keep an eye out for people like Adam Kokesh. I think, let's say, maybe he was just there to sincerely protest against the laws against marijuana, and then, you know, he got scooped up, and that easily could have been the case. I don't think he was armed or anything. Like, you know, so he was going there, I think, as a participant, and that's fine. But you want to be careful about other people hijacking it, because there are people that are very liberal that want marijuana legalized, and there's people that are very libertarian or other groups, and why not have common cause with these people? It's a majority opinion now, you know what I mean? And other drugs too, because then you cut down on the crime. Like marijuana legalization would be good for people not being hassled over something that's not dangerous, but then the other drugs, it would be so good to make them legal because it would cut down on street crime and, like, you know, gang territory, stuff like that. What would the territory be worth? There'd be a few petty hustles left, right? But nothing like the drug game.
Right. And I mean, I think that there's a lot of unrest going on. And, you know, we went to the March Against Monsanto protest in Cleveland, and it happened across hundreds of cities and countries on May 25th. And I think it's just, you know, we have a right to know, right? We have a right to know what our government is doing and what they're trying to get their nose and their business into, whether it's related to, you know, snooping in on journalists or, you know, messing with our food and making these horrible acts. You know, we have a right to a transparency. And I think more and more with the explosion of social media and, you know, the explosion of questionable privacy, people are becoming more open and expect that of, you know, big institutions like the government. And so when we find out that they're doing this secret, sneaky stuff and trying to figure out who these AP writers are, or they're you know, shutting down somebody for the their very American right to protest the marijuana laws.
Yeah.
You know, like, even though I don't agree with a bunch of people marching in with guns, you know, you have a right, if you don't think the gun laws are good in America, to protest them. You know, you have that right as an American.
Yeah, you do have the right to protest. It's like, it's in the Constitution. I mean, and you know, you do see how, on the one hand, there's a lot of people on the far right that use the kind of banner of the Constitution to just mean, try to, like, deny rights to people. But then there's a lot of sincere people on both sides, on all sides, across the country, that really want the Constitution to mean something in terms of people having their Fourth and Fifth Amendment right of privacy, having their First Amendment right of free expression. And yeah, like, you know, I think there's, and then there's the fake libertarians, and there's the people like Rand Paul, who was recently reassuring interest groups, you know, your Christian right-wing interest groups, that of course he wants to keep drugs illegal. You know, the guy who runs on his father Ron Paul's brand and talks about how he's a libertarian. Of course, put him in as senator in Kentucky, and all of a sudden he's talking to right-wing Christian interest groups, and he's telling them, oh, of course we'll keep it illegal, because it's the game.
Yeah.
Somebody told him, somebody sat him down from the DEA or somewhere and told him the game, and yeah. He's like, well, we're going to keep it illegal now, because powerful interests, or, you know, like, however he, you know, he sees it. Maybe he sees it in terms of, you know, narrow-minded, you know, religious morality, but either way, it certainly doesn't go with the brand he advertises, a libertarian, you know, and I think, like, we have to find out who's sincere and who's not. But the people, I think, like you said, anybody, whatever side, should be in favor of labeling food. And we were at that protest you mentioned. That was in Cleveland. There were a good number of people there.
Yeah.
There
what were, would you say? Maybe
Few hundred. Yeah, in the march. And then hanging around the square for a while. There were dozens of people there for like, you know, a few hours. But the height of the march, when it came around the corner, yeah, I mean, I took some video of that, and you took pictures, and there were a lot of people there, and they were really feeling, like, strongly about being against GMO foods, which I, you know, I'm against, and I think not only that, but it should be labeled. But that shouldn't be as far as it goes. It should, you know, this stuff does not seem like, you know, from what we've learned so far, this stuff doesn't seem to have the health benefits of normal, like, natural food, you know. And I'm not really someone who's against, like, using science to improve things, but I'm not really for using science to make things worse.
Well, yeah, and my photos are on Flickr. My username is Jaguar Jess, and hopefully we'll have them in the show notes.
Yeah, you know, I have a link in the show notes draft already, so okay. it's I have a link to your tag for that event. It's on Flickr. You can find the show notes at djmcloud.com, and then look for podcast 88, and then there's links there and stuff like that for the podcast.
But we were talking about how, you know, you thought maybe the approach wasn't far enough.
There could be more.
I think that after reading and kind of understanding a little bit more about the protest, the people who already want, you know, are against, you know, want the labeling and are against GMO foods, they're already pushing that far agenda. This protest was really to talk to the average person. And literally, the march in Cleveland went around the West Side Market, which is a really popular tourist and local destination.
Very popular,
so
both.
We marched
yeah.
around restaurants, and it was a nice day, so people were sitting outside on the patio and drinking their beers, as they do in Cleveland. And the idea was to be like, let's just get regular Joe Schmo to agree, hey, don't you think we have the right to know what's in our food? Can you agree to that? Joe Schmo would probably agree to that. If they're the most Republican, right-wing, gay hater in the world, they might want to know what's in their food. And they brought kids because the person who started the march against Monsanto was a mom who was just like, I want to let my kids know. And if you can kind of appeal to that and say, hey, don't you think it's right to just know? And I think they kind of tried to take out the politics and bring it to a, hey, don't we deserve to know? I mean, we have food labeling right now. We know that there's sugar and that there's, you know, cholesterol.
This is probably,
you know,
more important than that.
Exactly.
People overemphasize a lot of those things on the label, and they don't label the important stuff. It's, that's really becoming a problem. You're right. The science is moving away from the labeling, and the FDA is controlled by interest groups. So just the same group that brings you all these messed up drugs through for approval, through rushed approval, it's now mishandling the food chain. And it's allowing Monsanto to do all sorts of terrible stuff. stuff. And the people, like, were very, you know, like, you know, people were chanting. There's a lot of signs specifically calling out Monsanto, because I think they're the one that's becoming the real target. But I think, like, you know, there's other companies, too. Archer Daniels, Midland, and all sorts of companies that are definitely not doing the right thing.
If you look
major
at
food companies.
All the food companies that supported the bill, or supported to kill the bill in California against the GMO labeling.
California's voted the wrong way on so many of those issues. It's just unbelievable. Such a disappointment when California could have led the country to say, put labels on food. That's all that was about. And California voted no. Sometimes I wonder about California voters, because, you know, I lived there 5 years. You've lived there many more years than that. It's a nice place, but they hide some crazy voters away in some of them hills, I think.
Well, I think that, like, GMO labeling is like the new saturated fat. I mean, once people really got the information, hey, saturated fat is really, really bad because here's what it does to you.
Yeah, but now that's more qualified than it used to be, right? Because that used to be the big bugbear, and now it's not quite the issue that it used to be. And then, of course, trans fat was all you heard about 5 years ago. Now I don't hear much about that.
But I think it's because it's been exposed, it's been open, it's labeled, and people now know, okay, this food has this kind of fat in it, and I can do my research on it.
It's easy to see. That's like the first thing on a lot of labels.
Yeah.
That's what jumps out right away is fat and saturated fat, more before even calories and stuff, like it seems.
And now, I mean, you know, let people make the decision on whether or not they want to eat genetically modified food or not, you know, and let them go and understand and look at the research and what people have found, you know, the cancer, the birth defects, I mean, just the horrible things that happen with genetically modified things, you know. It's just not a good thing. And so I think they just want the right to know, which is just a really great chant, you know. Just give us the right to know, you know, give us that information. Stop hiding stuff from us.
Just because you have a lobby, just because you have powerful lobby doesn't mean you should be able to hide information from consumers. Like, we need some consumer advocacy in this country, you know.
And that's the other side of this coin, which is, stop protecting these big American corporations. I mean, the act that Obama signed was called the Monsanto Protection Act. You know,
they don't hide it. No, they like to put it right out there now. They don't like to use euphemisms as much. They like to just say what they're doing, and it's like they realize that people aren't really doing enough to stop it in numbers that matter. You know, like, they have such powerful lobbies, and they have such control over, like, Congress, the executive branch. It's really bold. I agree, absolutely.
Where is the United States of America People Protection Act? I mean, that's your job, Americans government. Like, that's what you're supposed to do every day, is protect us, not the corporations, not the ones that are trying to hide things from us and poison us. Oh, but wait, you want us to get sick so that we can feed into your fucked up healthcare system so that you can give us a bunch of drugs and keep us being sick, because that's how you make money.
It's easy to see it.
It's all connected. It's all related.
Well, there's a lot of very, very rich drug companies and hospital companies.
Yeah, there's a man selling vuvuzelas.
Yeah,
so that got the party going a bit, and a lot of great signs, you know, people dressed up, a lot of people brought their kids. We got heckled, you know, and
like a few people, not too many.
Yeah, but mostly it was sort of, from what I could tell, the people that were sitting and observing, a couple people I saw come up and ask, what is GMO, or, you know, what are you guys here for, and wanted to learn. And I think that was the goal of the demonstration, was really to get people to ask and to find out about, you know, what it is that, you know, they're asking for, which is just simple labeling.
Yeah.
And don't tell me that it's hard to do and you have to change your packaging. Wah, wah, wah. You know?
Corporations can afford it. As long as they pass the law, they'll do it. And as long as Congress can get the law through and President signs it, the corporations will have to adapt to it.
Oh, and the best thing is they give them like 5-10 years to, like, do these things. By 2027, everything will be labeled. And it's like, how about you shorten that to, like, by 2015,
because,
right?
By then, every single thing will have to be labeled, and there will literally just be, people will just think that means it's food. Because everything will have that possibly. I mean, it'll be so hard by then if the current course doesn't change, right? Because it's taking over the food supply. Its pollen gets out there, and it gets picked up, and then people that don't even want it have to pay the prices for it. Have to pay the royalties for it, because it drifted into their fields.
And, I mean, I hear this sort of resurgence of, you know, I think one of the, there was a farmer that spoke, and, you know, he's like, grow your own food. And it's like, okay, I get it. Wouldn't it be nice
that's
if we could all have...
That's one solution, but that's not the whole
exactly.
solution.
Exactly. And here's the thing, you know, I don't want to grow my own food, okay? Like, I want to grow some stuff, but I want to be able to walk into a grocery store and trust that everything in there... It's grown and it's labeled correctly. So if the Ohio apples are local, great. And if this is organic, great. You know, like, I want to know where stuff comes from. If my avocados are from Mexico, I may choose not to buy them. You know, like, I want to be able to make that decision. And all we're asking is for you to tell us where our food is from. And then what we can do is go, hey, wow, got a lot of stuff from different places. And as consumers, we can raise the voice to the supermarkets and say, what is important to us is for you to bring locally supported agriculture to this supermarket. Go out and work with the farmers and go out and work with them. And then, you know, you realize that the farmers, well, a lot of them are using genetically modified things anyway. And so you challenge them as consumers to say, this is what we want.
They're a smaller farmer. You can actually influence what they do a lot more easily than a huge corporation, which is going to push stuff on you.
Right.
And so this is that guy you're talking about who's that local farmer. And like you said, this is only one solution. It's only one idea.
Yeah.
But he's an interesting character. So here's a little bit of the video I recorded. That's the audio from it. People are cheering about how they're handling seeds. So,
well,
a little clip from the protest.
And I'll have to say, at this point in the protest, people had just come back from marching around once.
Yes,
and around there was this, in my opinion, awkward pause of, okay, so we've all marched around. You know, it started at 2 o'clock Eastern time, 11 a.m. Western time. And people were like, well, what are we going to do now?
Yeah, it was,
and a few people hijacked the... Yeah.
There's a little stoop that people were on. No one was really mic'd or anything. Someone had a megaphone, but it wasn't really working. So someone who was like the two ladies who organized it were up there with megaphones, not really using them right. And then there was this guy with, like, just has a big voice, so he was able to talk. And then there was a woman playing bongos and a guy playing like a ukulele guitar thing. And these all happened, came and went, and it was very unorganized. It was kind of funny. And it like someone could have just stepped on that stage and, I don't know, kind of hijacked it for a while. But I restrained myself.
Yeah, I don't know that any of those people were planned speakers.
No, that's why I was saying anyone could hijack it. And I almost got up there and started telling people to... you know, smoke a lot of weed and also buy my novel, you know, because my novel went on sale on Amazon.
Very cool.
I came out with edition one. So, you know, it was available for free. I spoke in podcast 60 about the book. And at that point, version 0.2 was out and it was available for free download. Now I have it on Amazon, so it's for sale. And, you know, I did correct a few spelling errors and stuff to make it 1.0. It's got an author picture in the back, and I added an afterword, which is really just the description that I wrote for the Kindle, you know, page.
Okay.
So
check it out.
Yeah, the book's called Crossing the Continental Divide, and you can find it on Amazon, or you can find a link at the show notes, and you know, then you could read it because. You know, I didn't tell those... I'm not sure. I didn't get up on stage there. But what would you have said if you went up on stage?
I would have said that this is an open forum, and I would have invited people to come up and share their stories. So I don't know that I necessarily would have shared anything quite personally other than, yes, I agree, you know, there's the right to know. But I would have loved to have been the facilitator to invite people up to come and share their stories, like, you know, talk about your urban, you know, gardening.
You would have been a great MC.
Exactly. And I think that's really what it needed. You know, let me bring up the mom with her two little young kids and go, why is this important to you? And really hearing from the community.
That's true. You could have just questioned some of the people who would come.
Stories.
A lot of people with kids
came.
You took good pictures of a lot of the kids.
Yeah. Why are you here? Why is this important to you? You know, what do you want to know? And, you know, you could hear those little stories, you know, mixed in conversations or as people were kind of, you know, holding signs and cheering and they'd have their own little side conversations. But when you had this group gathered, you know, it really called for, yes, an MC to kind of pick people together. And even if it wasn't, even if you didn't have planned speakers, a personality that could be encouraging and create an environment where people feel safe to jump up and go, I want to say something, or I just, even if you want to just say,
absolutely,
I hate that they, you know, don't label stuff and I want to know what's in my food and, you know, where do you guys grocery shop, or, you know, I support a local farm and, you know, there's, you know, go to this website because there's all these great, you know, local farm sources you can find in Ohio. Like, you had this great community event, and where's the sharing of information other than, hey, it's a nice day, let's show up and cheer and rally. Let's take it to the next level and educate all these people that are here, you know. And there was a little bit of like, hey, go sign up for this email, whatever. So I kind of was like, it disheartened me a little bit, but having worked in nonprofit type of situations before, I think that's the biggest downfall is that lack of organization. It's like
lack
you really
of professionalism need sometimes.
A professional person that's done it for profit and knows what it takes to do
it
for profit.
Yeah,
to come
you gotta
in
be
and
dedicated
it.
Regardless. I'm
not
with you.
Yeah, I shouldn't say not necessarily for profit.
Well, no, helps. Something or done it extremely seriously, you know, in the nonprofit sector. I know what you mean. You can't. You gotta take advantage of every moment when you have people together.
Absolutely.
And wanting to be activists.
It was a missed opportunity.
But they still took advantage of some of the opportunity.
They did. I don't want to totally criticize what went on. And, I mean, we went some lunch, and as we were walking back to get our bikes, because we rode our bikes down there, there were maybe a good, you know, 10, 15 people.
And a few people walked into the burrito places we were leaving.
With
that had probably just finished protesting, too.
Yeah. So it was good. I think from the photos I saw, you know, it happened all over the world. And I was reading Monsanto's Twitter feed and kind of, you know, they had some very PR comment about everybody has the right to protest and blah, blah, blah. But it'll just be interesting to see what comes of this now. You know, like this woman that this mother that started it. You know, can she take this national energy and push it? I kind of think it's interesting that she did it over a holiday weekend because news kind of tends to drift off around, you know, the weekend. But
that's a good point. I don't know. I wonder if she considered that, or maybe that was a time when she thought people would be around on Saturday. Maybe, you know, I don't know. That's a really good question. Yeah, but that's a good summary of it. So we've had some music from SoundCloud on the show before. This is a remix of MSMR.
Like reading the comments on SoundCloud.
Oh yeah, they come in real time when you're watching like that. Yeah. The remix is by this group called Churches with a V, where the U would be.
It's like that old school spelling, right?
Yeah, right. You might see that in really old type. Yeah.
In Italy, I saw a lot of them.
Yeah. Just, I went and listened to the original version of the song, and it just didn't have the energy. It just didn't have the, you know, the buzz to it.
Who does the original version?
MSMR, I guess? I'm not sure how that's pronounced. It's one of those things that has a hook, but they really amp up the hook with their beats, you know, and it's a quieter, slower song. Not many artists are better than their remix. Maybe Beth Orton, usually. We were talking about Flickr. Do we need to talk about the redesign, or maybe we're good for Flickr discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's following, I'm going to call it the Pinterestization of the web.
That's a great point.
It's the tile-based, sort of multi-column tile, flowing, your eyes are going left and right and up and down. It's very image heavy. And even when you look at, like, I just looked at mine, they're all different sizes. So some will be smaller, some will be bigger. You know, they're not all consistent, and they're just a big mesh of images. You know, there's not a lot of separation between the images and a lot of white space, which Flickr was really known for a while, to have a lot of this white space around all their photos. Now it's just this big collage effect look of images. You know, I give it to Flickr for hanging in there, but I really feel like that's all they're really doing is just hanging
in
there.
Yeah, I gotta say, I really think they've done a pretty good job with their app. Their iOS app, I think, is pretty solid now. And I've used it to push photos to Twitter from my iPhone. And, you know, I think it's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, here's the way it looks when I log in. Yeah, you got, like, these big photos and then little ones inset, like one of those TVs that was big in the 90s. And now Google Plus, actually, I think that when you said Pinterestization, I was like, that's a perfect way to describe the way Google Plus looks now. They had a redesign in the last few weeks. And it's two columns now, so I guess you could probably see some imitating of Facebook.
For sure.
But aren't they all in some way chasing Pinterest?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, people didn't realize how popular Pinterest was going to get, and it's so funny when people talk about it, like, they're still sort of baffled, and I wanted to just be like, really? Like, we are an image, you know, consumption society. It's who we are now. You know, we are drawn to the images. We are drawn to that collection of them and seeing a collection of images and letting it tell a story. So, you know, Facebook is getting further and further away from actually, I don't know. Now they've just started doing that silly tell us how you're feeling. The, like, emotions, emoticons, you know, which is such an old web thing. That's been around for since the days of LiveJournal.
Are you saying that Facebook is starting to recycle old ideas now and doesn't really have much in the tank?
Where's the bell? Yeah, yes.
Okay, well, I guess they were going to get to that point at some point, because they were coming up. They had a lot of the new stuff that, for a while. And now, look, I think you're right about Flickr, is that they're gamely trying to hang in there.
Yeah.
The question is, are they really going to survive into, like, you know, yeah, the ongoing decades? But Yahoo's really trying to be aggressive. They're buying Tumblr.
Yeah, they already did,
they're
right?
They're redoing. I believe that's on, and maybe the sale is closed even, or maybe not. I'm not really sure. But yeah, that's really starting to maybe they're at least seeing some effect from having the new CEO, Marissa Mayer, who used to work at Google.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I really think Yahoo is an interesting story, and I'm curious to see what she's going to do. Not as a woman, but as the leader of the company.
Yeah, no, I think she's someone that you got to look at on just the her own accomplishments. I don't think there's any, you know, she's someone that's done a lot, and I think in a way, I guess she is a pioneering woman CEO, but you know what's interesting is that I don't think she's been framed as much like that. Granted, it was a few years ago, but Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina at eBay and then HP, I mean, you know, that was made out of them being women CEOs, right? I think Marissa Mayer is in there like she wants to be the best CEO in, you know, in the Valley, and she has to go up against her former boyfriend or friend or something like Larry Page, who is the CEO of Google. And this is about being the best and building the best, and even though they're much smaller. So I think she's a real pro. I don't think she's probably not made a right move in every phase at Google and at Yahoo, but I think that she's somebody, if you were Yahoo shareholder, which I'm not, it would be a better feeling to have her, I think, leading the company than the previous people they've had there.
For sure. I don't know. I've been thinking actually about Facebook and their little comment of, you know, adding in the sentiment of your post, you know, feeling happy, feeling this, feeling that, whatever. And I wonder why they added that. And I wonder if it's like, you know, because I feel like the hashtag is what people are using now to describe sentiments and just describe feelings.
It's all over the place.
But I feel like the hashtag is heavily associated with Twitter.
It is, isn't it? And it's also gotten into Instagram. Yes. Instagram has gotten to the point now where everything has to be something, hashtag something of Instagram. So if you have like a spoon, it has to be spoons of Instagram. And if you have a cat, it has to hashtag a cat and cats of Instagram.
When I take pictures of my nails, I always do nails of Instagram. And then I get a bunch of likes.
Because
a hashtag is a community. That's
right.
So you're
just plugging into that group of people searching for it. And those people are going to find it and like it. Okay.
And it's really fun. Like when I post things on Instagram and, you know, I don't put a hashtag on it, I get a much lower reaction because I don't have a lot of followers. But I do gain a lot of new followers when I do use hashtags. And I think, you know, at first I was very private with my Instagram. Like when I went onto Instagram, I was like, oh, finally, away from all this, you know, social media craziness that's Facebook. And, you know, there's reports out there that it's interesting. The data shows that they had a 1% increase in terms of new teens signing up for Facebook. But I think that's probably global. And I think some of the articles that I've read in terms of sentiment with teens and Facebook, which I thought was really funny, was, you know, your parents are on Facebook.
Yeah, right.
Who
it's
wants
not
to
it's
be
not all
friend,
good
you know?
In these
and
days.
You, and like teens were like there was a Pew Research study that, you know, teens said they were feel like they were being watched, and you know, it's like I kind of feel the same way. It's like whatever I post on Facebook, you know, it's not really my true self.
You know,
it's
so many people.
Edited
well,
version of myself.
That's the way people are, right? But who wants to compromise? Like, yeah, you have to aim the message. Is it just a classic lowest common denominator thing?
Yeah.
Is that you? Everyone from your professional, personal, college, post college. I mean, you actually, yeah, that's
yeah.
actually true, right? Like people from that. So you have all these different groups. And it really doesn't, how is there really a message for all of them? That's why when authors talk about putting the link to their book on Facebook, I mean, it's not the right target. Unless you only have friends and family that are into whatever kind of genre you write, like you have to find an audience that's into the kind of stuff you're writing about, not just a general group of people you know. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of mistargeting of messages. The problem is a lot of people don't really understand the nuances of where to target. So they're either promoting something that isn't the right place to promote it, where it's not the right place to promote it, just for effectiveness, or they're saying stuff that's like, come on, just save that for when you're hanging out at the docks, throwing rocks into the ocean or something, you know?
Yeah.
So speaking of stuff you should probably save, well, for that, or just throwing it in the ocean with the rock.
Yeah.
In the latest edition of Hot Talk. Joining me this week, pop culture expert and editor of World War Magazine.
I guess I have the introductions
queued
up.
Also, she She's an actress and a comedian, and she's performing tonight at 10 on Gotham Comedy Club Live on Access TV.
It's a joke. It's a fucking joke. So it's people don't know.
And she is the anchor of CNN's Starting Point. Please welcome Soledad O'Brien.
You are an alcoholic.
But Soledad, before we get started, if you don't mind, because it's everywhere, are you leaving CNN?
You know, we're talking about my role, as you know.
Literally no one will know because literally no one's watching CNN.
Right.
We're talking about my role.
We're talking about what ways I can connect.
That's not even very good PR. It's not even a very good surface story.
That would be a schedule I would like.
Wendy Williams, that's her laugh. That's Wendy Williams laughing, by the way. You're just shaking your head.
I should narrate
your reaction. This would be the thing that
should I even have shoes on?
I'm not sure. I think they might just be the color.
Yeah. Tweeted a photo of herself and the actress Lena Dunham, and called her my N-word, as in it's better, I guess. Well, she ended it with an A. She spelled it N-I-G-G-A, and that was part of the caption. And
she's talking about Lisa Lampanelli.
Controversy. I talked about it yesterday. I don't approve of this. After the backlash, this is what Lisa tweeted to the world. She says, "The N-word ending in E-R is far different context from the word ending in A." I can't believe she's trying to justify. "Ask any person who knows the Urban Dictionary. It means friend." I am the Urban Dictionary. No, it doesn't. It's a racial epithet. Okay, let's go to Soledad.
So, if you go check out the Urban Dictionary, there actually is one online, and example number 6 under the
she's explaining
yeah, Soledad, because there's a printed version too.
It has nothing right to next do to with Webster's. So I would say, in a nutshell, white people, do not say the N-word with an A. Do not say the N-word with an E-R.
Just
stop.
White people, by the way.
No,
Asians, everybody else, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I think only probably only black people.
Why I don't tweet, because I know I'll just get myself into trouble. You know, it's a very different thing when you're in a comedy club and you're in this kind of environment where you could say whatever you want. It's kind of down and low and dirty.
Yeah.
And tweeting, everything is out there and it's literal. But as a comedian, I really believe that political...
Well, so anyway, she's just going on here.
I really believe that what Lisa was doing, her intent was not to be derogatory. Maybe she had a poor choice of words. It was a bad decision, which is why tweeting when you're drunk... I've made some huge mistakes.
Yeah, you're saying she was necessarily drunk, but it was less a joke than a photo caption, which is part of the problem.
Right.
And also, I don't trust any word that if I spell it wrong, it's offensive.
Right.
Because I don't spell well.
Well, no, neither do I, Lampanelli, I do like you. I'm going to preface that. I know that you've sold out shows at the Apollo Theater. I know that a large part of your audience fan base is black, including me. But I will say this.
That sounds like I have black friends.
Day, girl. You're going to use that word in the wrong way, and you are going to get somebody's black handprint right across your pretty white face.
And we're clapping.
There's nothing to clap
clapping
about.
Clapping for violence
there's,
now.
Well, exactly. There's nothing to clap about. Although I guess there maybe people are clapping for the warning she's giving her. But you know, okay. So all I'm saying is though that this
the
is
warning
something,
being a violent
this,
act.
It's not good. I'm not endorsing
thereby
it.
Thereby maybe even racially stereotyping people yet again by saying that that's how they're going to react. I don't think she even realizes that. Why wouldn't she say that the next time you say that, you're going to get a well-educated African-American person who's going to sit you down and talk to you about it like I am here? Oh, no, they're gonna slap you.
Can't argue with that. You're right. But, you know, that's what it comes down to is you just got to not use that that terminology. I've heard this. I'm just saying I've heard this from ignorant people, granted. But I've heard that this fake distinction... The different versions of the N-word with different endings, that, I mean, you can't be serious. You can't really think that that's how it is. Like you're going to say it differently at the end, and you're going to rely on people to think that that's cool and you're all in or something.
It's the same thing with biatch.
Oh.
B-I-O-T-C-H.
That's not any better than just saying
this
bitch.
Like, Lisa could have said the same thing, you know, posing with my biatch.
And that would have been offensive also. Yeah. Except it would have been offensive to the woman she was hanging out with right there and not to other people. That's another weird difference because she was hanging out with Lena Dunham, I think, very white young woman, right? So just it's like that's like calling, you know, it's like calling her like a slur of a race that she isn't a member of. So that there's a certain you could understand how people that are of that group aren't gonna like that. You know what I mean? It's like, whereas at least if she used that bad, you know, she used the word biatch or something, that would be offensive in a more like direct way, because she would have to explain it to the person she was hanging out with, not like a bunch of people that saw it on Twitter, right? I mean, that's what's going on, right? I mean, people are just showing off that they're hanging out with, like Lena Dunham is really popular right now.
Yep.
We even talked about her on this show previously. Well, I mean, come on, right?
I'm curious what Lena, if anything, you know, responded to or it. But I guess, you know, she probably just kept low.
That you ducked that one. I would guess, but we could check it out. We could type those too and see. But you know, when was that time? I guess I think it was one of those where we talked about the HBO show Girls. Yep, it was episode number 66 where we talked about the HBO show Girls. Now, I mean, how do you spell Lampinelli? I mean, it's hopeless. Oh, okay, so she does. I guess in this age, everyone has to respond to everything.
Of course.
Okay, because I thought maybe he just wouldn't say anything, because what's the point?
Hopefully she called her PR agent.
Probably. One problem with the voice of a generation talk, you may find yourself in controversies you weren't directly involved in. Oh, so this is what popwatch.ew.com wrote about it. Quote, that, you know, again, that's what happened to Lena Dunham this week when comedian Lisa Lampinelli posted a photo on Twitter of herself with Dunham along with the caption, quoting inside quotes, me with my N-word, Lena Dunham of HBO Girls, I love this.
Biatch. Which I didn't know that was part of the tweet.
We just stumbled onto that. Well, that takes us full circle. I gotta say, we came around, and that was an unexpected conclusion to the DJMCloud.com podcast, episode number 88, with me, Dan McKeown, and with the beautiful and eloquent Jessica McKeown. And it is May 26, 2013, as we record.
Yes, it is. Woohoo! Memorial Day weekend.
That's right.
Let's remember all those who have fallen.
Yeah, that's what this weekend is about, and it also is about partying. So enjoy out there.
Enjoy all those Memorial Day sales.
If you're a big shopper, go enjoy
that.
Bunch
of people died! Let's buy a mattress.
Oh, I think that one actually deserves.
It's a joke. It's a fucking joke.
You know, and if we only had that clip about Bart Simpson saying there should be a day for veterans, and then Lisa yells, they have two.
Yeah. I probably just said something offensive. If there was an offensive word like the N-word or biatch for deceased soldiers,
I don't think you're I would have just said offensive. That. But what do I know?
Pretty soon.